This is episode 45 of the Great Speech Podcast on 10 myths about public speaking and why you should ignore them.
Let's go.
It's a Great Speech Podcast for the public speakers. We're going way down deep to look at what makes a communicator. We'll look at all different topics from the bottom to the top. So get your mind free of all the distractions and please listen up, listen up, listen up.
It's the Great Speech Podcast.
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 Thanks, Dad. So welcome back, my great communicators. How you guys doing? I trust you are well after that lengthy break. Ooh, yeah, I know you guys were wondering, is Collar actually ever going to come back to the podcast? But yes, I'm here. I think I explained at the end of the last episode or sometime in the last episode that I needed a break. I kind of had felt like I was running on empty by the end of the summer, or at least by the beginning of the summer, rather. And yeah, I just needed a break. So fortunately, we were able to get away. I had a nice deep, long break, lots of sun and sea and swimming, and I feel revitalized and energized, so this podcast is back. I'm going to be cranking them out, so I'm with you all the time, so you kind of catch up with the great stuff that I'm trying to share. This will still be season six. Normally, when I've had a break, I come back with a new season, but since I am still doing this series on how to give a great speech, I really want to crack through a lot of the different elements of speech making. So I'm going to still call this season six. Let's call this season six continued. As usual, like and subscribe. I don't know. Can you like a podcast? Probably not. Okay, subscribe anyway. And make sure you share it with somebody that you know needs some help with communication. I am, of course, Collar Elishonike, your communication super skills coach, guru, guide, all things communication, basically. Scroll down in the show notes if you haven't already, because, you know, I've got some great stuff. I've got a great free workshop on the five communication super skills you need to build your career. There is also, I've got my Nail My Speech program. If you want to go a bit deeper into public speaking, got an entire program that you can kind of enroll in. And yeah, just reach out if you want to have a chat with me on all things communication. So let's get going today. Oh, no, let me give my quote. You see, this is what happens when you haven't done it for a while. I forgot to give my quote. So the quote of the episode is by George Orwell, the English writer. And he said, myths which are believed in tend to become true. Myths which are believed in tend to become true. Because today we are going to talk about the myths about public speaking. And there are many out there. It's astonishing, really, when I speak to clients who want to engage with me because of presentation skills. They're really worried about that, which is obviously an important part of communication. And they have so many myths about public speaking, or they say things that I'm kind of scratching my head like, why do you believe that? Why do you subscribe to that? It's not true. So I thought, you know what, rather than always scratching my head, what I'm going to do is I'm going to record this. I might actually even write an article about it. So we've got different options, maybe even do a video as well. So I might record this, do a video, write this out so that I can just send it to every client before they come to me and say, hey, read this or listen to this or watch this before you come to me, so that you kind of just clear out those misconceptions about public speaking and presenting. Because the truth is, public speaking presenting is something that in your career, you must get on top of. You must master it in a way that means instead of shying away from opportunities, which so many of my clients tell me that they do. Maybe that's you as well. Instead of taking opportunities, but not making the best of them, which again tends to be where I would say probably 60% of people who come to me say, yes, I do them. I'm fine with them. But then I explore with them, okay, but how much do you use those opportunities to not just get by, but actually enhance your reputation? You know, when you get that look in your audience's eyes where you can tell that you really have connected with them and they are completely absorbed and engaged with what you are saying. And then afterwards, they're asking you questions or they're proposing stuff to you because you just tapped into that zone that makes them feel that you are the person they need to engage with. Have you achieved that? And if you haven't, then you really have to get on top of your communication skills, presentation skills in particular, because it does wonders for your career and your business. So yeah, anyway, that's my little spiel. As you know, I'm all things communication. So when it comes to public speaking and presentation skills in particular, I really want you to discount the many, many myths there are out there. And today I'm going to go through 10 of them. I would say they're my top 10, but there are loads more out there. But these are the ones that kind of really occurred to me that I thought I would do. I've not done them particularly in any order. Some are probably more either important myths than the other. I guess important in that they are more widely held. Or they have a more significant impact. But I'm just going to run through from 1 to 10. And yeah, let's see how we get on. Okay, so myth number one is that you have to be a natural to be a great public speaker. That really great public speakers are born rather than made. That there is something that those great speakers just have that they've always had. And because you didn't get born, you weren't born with it, you can never attain those heights. Poppycock. I was trying to think of a good, extreme word there without actually swearing. Poppycock. Bullpucky. Rubbish. There is absolutely no basis for that myth, because I actually can't think of a single person, a single great, so-called great communicator or great public speaker who was anything other than learned, as in they became better. They struggled with it. They improved, they developed, and then you saw them kind of at the peak of their powers. And that's when you came to kind of see how great as public speaking they were. I really actually don't know any. I'm struggling to think. I've watched early Steve Jobs. He was okay, but he wasn't spectacular. He wasn't Steve Jobs of the, you know, late great fame, unveiling the iPhone and all those kinds of things. I've watched... or at least I've read about early Michelle Obama, who I think is a fantastic public speaker, and she struggled. We know about Winston Churchill. I've talked a few times about. I always love the stat that I think it's about 1,700, I think it is, speeches that Winston Churchill had given before World War II. Which is when he gave all the speeches that we kind of remember and know, you know, blood, toil, sweat and tears, and, you know, never in the field of human conflict of so many, owed so much to so few, that kind of stuff. All of that came in World War II, and all of that was after he had just done loads and loads and loads of speeches. And then you read that he struggled with, he had a speech impediment and so forth. So it really isn't the case. It really isn't the case that you have to be a natural, at public speaking to be great at it. And kind of a related issue with that is what I hear is many people talk about they're introverts. And because they are introverts, well, you know what? You need to be an extrovert to be a great public speaker. I'm an introvert. Therefore, I can't really do it. And again, complete bullpucky. In my experience, introverts actually are much more capable of growth as public speakers than extroverts. Introverts tend to listen more. And if you listen more, it means you're much more likely to be willing to find out what works for your audience, which if you do that work and do that preparation will mean that you're going to be a far better speaker. So no such thing as a natural public speaker being better than a studied public speaker. And that's why you have had such great speakers throughout history who have come from all walks of life. Malala, Obamas, Churchills, all those kind of people, all the TED Talks. In fact, better still, look at TED Talks and you will see a whole host. I mean, thousands now that they have of great speeches by different individuals, all doing it in different styles. Some of them will use notes, some of them won't, some of them have PowerPoint, some of them don't. But all of them end up being brilliant, not because they were born that way, but because they did the work. So I'll tell you another one, right? So kind of related to this is that, you have to be a natural, right? And it's kind of, you have to speak a certain way. The Queen's English kind of thing. You have to be able to speak in that way in order to be able to be a good speech maker. Again, just not true. In fact, kind of the proof of that. This is terrible. I might get kind of, this might be considered insurrection or mutiny. The Queen, who of course speaks the Queen's English, is really not a great speech maker. Now, I know she probably has to give it in a certain way, although you would think after a while she could kind of give it however she wants, but it's very staid. It's very kind of stately, but it's not particularly inspiring. So there you go. In fact, none of the royals actually find a great speakers. Prince Harry is probably the best that I've seen, but yeah, they're not great. So yes, you do not have to be a royal. You do not have to be a natural to be a great public speaker. Being great at communicating and being great at public speaking is actually about putting in the work. So that is myth number one exploded. So let's move on to myth number two. Myth number two is that you've got to use no ums and ahs. You've got to eliminate all your ums and ahs. Ums and ahs are filler words, ums and ahs and likes and formerly known as disfluencies, but we'll call them filler words because it's easier to say. And yes, many people think in terms of, I've got to reduce my ums and ahs. I've got to, I will sound terrible. I sound like I don't know what I'm doing or saying. I sound stupid. So I've got to eliminate the ums and ahs. The advice tends to be, instead of saying an um or instead of saying an replace it with a pause, because that's better. And so they do that. Again, this is a myth. Now, it's not a total myth in this way. The more fluent you are, i.e. the fewer disfluencies you have, the fewer filler words you have, then the more your audience will consider you to be an excellent speaker and communicator. So that is true to an extent. However, and there is research that backs it up, research by, all these academics. There was one by Duval and other kind of academics, a few others as well. But research has shown that actually what you want to aim for is moderate use of filler words. So moderate use of filler words. So that's one filler word every minute or so. If it gets kind of higher than that, then people start to notice. But one filler word every minute or so, which is kind of every 100, 150 words. Because that tends to suggest to speakers, to audiences, there's an element of authenticity, that it's not just kind of scripted, but it's you speaking from the heart, because they recognize that when speaking from the heart, you're likely to use some filler words, because nobody speaks with no filler words whatsoever. So you want to avoid too many ums and ahs and likes and you knows and literallys and whatever else is your particular go-to filler word. But you don't have to aim for zero. In fact, the research suggests that zero tends to make you seem and feel entirely scripted, which can undermine your impact as a public speaker. So doesn't that free you up, right? It's kind of, you know, because I get a lot of people thinking that, oh, you know, because I use ums and ahs, I sound totally stupid. And in fact, to prove that this isn't the case, I give the example of Donald Trump and Barack Obama. So Barack Obama, we know, is an excellent communicator, in particular, a great keynote speaker, keynote speech maker, especially the staged kind of speech. But if you have ever listened to him in a press conference where it's not scripted, he uses loads of ums and ahs, loads of them. I mean, it's littered with it, and it's actually way more than one a minute as well. But you wouldn't ever say that, oh, he doesn't know what he's talking about, right? You wouldn't say that because he just clearly does. You know, he's done his work, he's done his research, he's an intelligent guy and so forth. Donald Trump, by contrast, if you ever watch his press conferences, in fact, his speeches as well, because I don't think he scripts anything, he uses no ums and ahs whatsoever. I listened to them and I think I may have heard one or something, but he really just speaks entirely fluently. You know, he not necessarily sure how much his brain filtered through his brain, but the point is he speaks entirely fluently. And yet I think many would say that between him and Obama, you would say, I think Obama has more intelligence and knows more what he's talking about than Donald Trump. Many would disagree, I imagine. Although not many of you, I think, listen to this podcast. But nevertheless, the point I'm making is don't over worry about your ums and ahs. You want to try and reduce it so that it's not massively prevalent, but don't pressure yourself to reduce it to zero, because actually that's going to undermine how effective you are as a public speaker. So that's myth number two. The myth is you've got to eliminate all your ums and ahs, and the truth is you don't. Just keep it moderate. Okay, cool. Let's move on to myth number three. It's actually in a way related to the ums and ahs, or at least it's the thing that many of my clients say to me at the same time as they raise their concerns about ums and ahs. And that is that speaking too fast is bad, or speaking fast is bad, right? They say, oh, I speak too fast. You know, I race and it feels like, you know, I'm talking at 100 miles an hour and nobody's going to understand me. That is a myth. Let me explain, because there is some degree of truth to it. Like all myths, there is a little bit of truth. But I say it's a myth because people over worry about it, and therefore get themselves into kind of a bit of a muddle. So let me tell you why it's a myth. And it's actually really simple kind of mechanics of human understanding, basically. So the average rate of speech for somebody giving a speech or giving a presentation is roughly 150 words a minute. You know, some people speak much slower. You can go down to like the Kennedys, do like 80 words a minute, but you've kind of got to factor in applause and stuff. You can go much, much higher. I think Elon Musk is, you know, probably up to 200 or something like that. The average though is about 150 words, 160 words per minute. That's the average. So fast would be up to, say, 200 words per minute, things like that. But here's the interesting thing. The human mind, us as humans, which means your audience, have the mental capacity to understand someone, entirely understand someone speaking at 400 words per minute. So that's pretty much double what you're ever likely to do when you are giving your speech. So the average human being can understand words spoken at 400 words per minute. You do not speak that fast, trust me. So Don't worry about the whole I speak too fast thing. However fast you speak, it will be more than understandable, more than intelligible to your audience. Now, the reason there is a kernel of truth to the myth of speaking fast is bad is that if you speak fast and never give a little break or a pause for your audience to mentally process what you are saying, then they will understand, but they won't necessarily take it in to any degree of depth, right? So if you're giving a speech where you need your audience to not just be carried away by what you are saying, but to actually kind of consider it and think about it and respond to it, then yes, you want to slow down your speaking rate. But the way to do it isn't to just speak slower, which I know many people try and do. Actually, I did that in, I think in the last episode, I did a speech analysis of a speech that I had given, and I talked about how I just slowed down my speaking, but not because I was trying to be all authoritative, because I realized that I hadn't kind of prepared enough for the length of time that I had. So I thought, I'll just speak slower. Terrible. But yeah, getting back to this point, that what you don't want to do is just to slow down your speaking to a pedestrian rate, because that will probably sound stilted and it won't seem natural. Instead, what you can do is just build in some pauses after you have said a sentence or a paragraph, and then you pick it up again at your normal pace. And what that does is it gives your audience kind of just a few seconds, microseconds really is all they need, just to kind of mentally catch up, mentally process a little bit, and then you're off to the next statement and comment that you are making. So speak at your normal pace, keep going, then pause, then catch up, then speak at your normal pace, keep going. So just do that all the way through. And that's the way you can continue to speak at your normal pace, whether you think that's fast or not, but also give your audience a chance to kind of get it. So that's why really it's a myth. In fact, there is some research that suggests that people who speak faster come across as more authentic and more creative, and therefore audiences, it resonates with audiences more. And that's especially if you don't need people to, you know, it's not a data presentation where you need them to consider the data. It's more of a, you want them to kind of take on your overall message. And that in those kind of speeches, you know, you think about your church pastors and, you know, things like that. You can actually just get through the information without worrying too much about your pace. So yes, don't worry about speaking too fast. You don't. People will understand you. If you're paranoid about it, just build in some kind of pauses strategically. But otherwise, you are good. So let's move on to myth number four. So myth number four is, I don't know, probably, I guess maybe the, I don't know if it's the biggest myth, but it's certainly related to the biggest issue that I am asked about when it comes to public speaking, which is about nerves or fear. So myth number four is that the best speakers never get nervous, or good public speakers never get nervous. Oh my goodness, I cannot tell you how totally inaccurate this is, because I don't know any public speakers who do not get nervous. I really don't. In my podcast episodes, when I'm doing interviews, for instance, one of the questions I always ask in my kind of 10 question quick fire round is, how nervous, on a scale of 1 to 10, how nervous do you get before a speech? And it's always way up there, even for the people who do speech making regularly. And I can tell you for myself, I always get nervous just before I start speaking. The butterflies kicking. There's a really good, or at least I've worked out a really clear reason why that happens. And I'm actually going to do a full episode on that just because I'm kind of a geek about stuff like that and I'd like to geek out a little. But essentially, it is evolutionary. So the fact that you feel nerves isn't because you are somehow bad at it or there's something wrong with you. Don't know if you can hear that plane going overhead. You know me, I continue with all my podcast episodes no matter what happens. So sorry if it's affecting your sound. So it's not because you are bad at it or there's something wrong with you or others are better somehow. It is absolutely natural. And in fact, to a degree, it's necessary because it kind of spikes your adrenaline. And that means that you stay alert and it means you're going to give a speech that's much sharper. But to help you even further and to kind of prove that it's not a myth, it is a myth, is that so many known people, public speakers, things like that, suffered from nerves. You know, actors or famous people, Renee Zellweger, Nicole Kidman, Abraham Lincoln, Mahatma Gandhi, who I think reportedly almost walked out his first speech because he just froze, Sigmund Freud, Thomas Jefferson, just loads and loads of people. Two of my favorites, in fact, are Cicero, who was a legendary Roman orator. So literally, I mean, he was a public figure politician, but he was known as one of the greatest orators, at least the greatest orator of the Roman Empire, Cicero. But there's a great quote that he has, which is, personally, I am very nervous when I begin to speak. Every time I make a speech, I feel I am submitting to judgment, not only about my ability, but my character and honor. Wonder how that was in Latin, but yeah. So, and then you can tell that kind of slightly ancient Romanistic sentiment there, submitting to judgment about my character and honor. But yeah, he felt the same way. It feels like you are kind of up on the block and everybody is staring at you and judging you. So it's natural that you feel nervous about that. Same thing with, the other guy that I always love to quote, I use this quote every time I do kind of a workshop or training, is Moses. Moses, for many of us, at least if you're as old as me, when you think about Moses, you're actually thinking about Charlton Heston in the movie The Ten Commandments. And Charlton Heston, you know, big Hollywood booming voice, you know, let my people go, Pharaoh, and that kind of thing. That's kind of what Moses was in our minds for many years. But the real Moses in the Bible actually struggled with public speaking. It's reported that he had a stammer. And in Exodus chapter 4, verse 10, he pleads with God to not force him to have to go and speak to Pharaoh. And he says, "Pardon your servant, Lord. I have never been eloquent, neither in the past nor since you have spoken to your servant. I am slow of speech and tongue." And he actually wants his brother Aaron to kind of be the one to go and speak in his stead. God, of course, says, "No, get on with it, mate. Stop faffing about." And it works out. But the point is, nervousness is entirely natural. So do not think or assume that if you are nervous, there is something wrong with you. And the people who are good at it don't get nervous. They do. You know, even Beyonce, who is, you know, the fierce Queen Bey herself, I think her father admitted that she just isn't good and doesn't like public speaking. You can think about that, right? She goes out on stage every night and kind of knocks it out the park with these fierce performances. But when it comes to public speaking, she gets nervous. So everyone does it. Everyone suffers with it. There isn't a single person that I have heard that has ever said, "Nah, public speaking, love it, never single butterfly, I just get up there and regale the audience." So don't assume the best speakers aren't nervous, and don't assume that if you are, there's something wrong with you. There isn't. Okay, we are halfway through with myth number five. I'm going to keep this one kind of simple and short. The myth is that you should always start with a joke. And, you know, I see this so often. I see it so often. Somebody will get up and, you know, make a little crack, little wise crack, which gets mild kind of titters. Some are better than others. Yeah, and there's this conception that the first thing you have to say has to be some sort of piece of humor, because that's the only way to get your audience on side or warm them up or prepare them for what you're about to say. It really, really isn't true. With any audience, really what matters is that you say something that they want to hear. Say something that resonates and connects with them. And if you do that, it will not matter that you started with a joke. It won't matter if you didn't start with a joke. Similarly, if you start with a joke, but then you go on to say something that your audience doesn't land with your audience, it won't matter if you started with a joke. So you do not have to start with a joke or humor. Just say something that is worth hearing and listening to, and your audience will be fine with that. Okay, so let's go on to myth number 6. Actually, I need a drink of water, guys. Hold on. Thank you. Myth number 6. I need to memorize my speech. No, you do not need to memorize your speech. In fact, more than that, don't memorize your speech. Now, I know you guys are freaking out like, oh my God, I'm going to forget what I'm going to say. My mind's going to go blank. Yes, that is a real thing that does happen to people. But the antidote or the cure or the fix for that is not to memorize your speech. Because when you try to memorize your speech, this is what happens. You obsess about it. You spend all of your time focusing on the memorizing part as opposed to just the getting confident with it part. And you go in unconfident because your whole focus will be, oh my God, what if I forget that word or that line? I'm going to completely lose it. And what will also happen is if anything out of the ordinary happens, you're going to forget a particular line, then you're going to be thrown off and then everything's going to go out the window. Don't try to memorize your speech. Okay, Connor, but then what should I do? That's all right. I'm going to help you. Instead of memorizing your speech, I want you to focus on internalizing your speech. Internalizing your speech. The difference is this. Memorizing, it's about knowing the exact word you're going to say at exactly what time and when all the way through. And as I say, if you get thrown off slightly, kind of everything goes and it's difficult to kind of recover your place. Internalizing is where you just know that subject so damn well, so deeply, that you could stand and talk about it for hours, not knowing the precise words that you're going to use, but knowing the message that you want to convey. And when you've internalized something so well, then you can speak about it, including many times without making any notes, but you never run out of anything to say. You never lose your place because you just know the subject so deeply, so intrinsically. So for instance, if somebody said, go and give a presentation about the history of DNA, right? Unless you are a DNA scientist or whatever, or historian, you probably need to study that and, you know, maybe write a speech about it or whatever. But if somebody said, stand up and tell us about your first kiss, right? Or something that sticks in your mind, or, you know, you remember it intimately in terms of what happens. So you've internalized it so deeply, even if you haven't planned the specific words you're going to say. You could stand up and talk about it all day and all night. Why? Because it's entirely internalized. You didn't memorize it up until they asked you to say it. You hadn't thought about what you would say, but it's internalized. You know it so well that you can just speak without difficulty. So that's what you want to focus on. So when you're doing your preparation, you want to focus on knowing the subject really deeply. Now, it doesn't mean you can't make notes. I have a view on whether you should have a script or not. Generally, I think you shouldn't. You should try and do notes rather than scripts. But it doesn't mean you can't have notes and bullet points, and kind of you have one bullet point that tells you, once you see that point, you know what you're going to say for the entire section, that kind of thing. But really, I want you to shy away from memorizing it. It also will come across as scripted, which it basically is if you're memorizing, and that tends to undermine the degree of authenticity with which you come across. So don't memorize, try and internalize, and then practice until you can't get it wrong. That's really the way to approach it. Okay, so let us go on to myth. Where are we? Myth number seven. This is for all you middle managers out there and all you corporate kind of public speakers and presenters out there. Myth number seven is that you have to use PowerPoint. Oh, please. You do not have to use PowerPoint or slides or keynotes or Prezi or all the myriad of slide presentation software out there. You do not have to do it. Again, this is one that I always get, you know, when somebody wants to run by me a presentation that they have to give. The first thing they'll do is, okay, Colin, let me send you my slides. And I'm always like, no, I don't want to see your slides. Your slides don't have anything to do with your presentation in terms of the value of that presentation. Your slides are visual aids to enhance the message that you already have or should have, which is what you are going to share from what you actually say. So no, I do not want to see your slides. What I want to know is, do you have something of great value to share? And if you do, I'm going to pay attention whether you have slides or not. And if you don't, I'm going to disconnect from you whether you have slides or not. So you do not have to use PowerPoint, right? You think about the greatest speeches in the world that have been given. They didn't use PowerPoint, right? Martin Luther King didn't stand up in the middle of the Washington March, you know, on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial and say, as you can see in this chart over here, we are here in reality and dream is over there. So I have a dream. It's like I have a 3-point, you know, scheme to achieve that dream. He didn't do any of that. He stood up and he spoke from the heart and he made us believe. He had a message to share, which we all bought into. You do not have to use PowerPoint. Even if you are giving a corporate data presentation, it's not that you shouldn't use PowerPoint. Remember what I'm saying. I'm not saying don't use PowerPoint. What I'm saying is you don't have to. So always start your presentation preparation, not with your slides, but imagine that, for instance, imagine there was no electricity on the day, right? Or the computer broke down, so you couldn't use slides, but you nevertheless had to share your message about whatever the topic is. Start from that premise and work out how you can give an excellent speech and presentation just by what you say. And then, and only then, once you have worked that out, then you can move on to prepare slides. And that way you're going to be thinking about your slides purely as a visual aid, keeping it mostly visual rather than loads of text. I want you to have no more than 7, 8, 9 words on any one slide, right? Not loads and loads of bullet points and packed with stuff. But you're using a visual aid just as a cue and enhance the understanding. Because there are people who are very visual learners or visual understanders. So if you can combine that with what you say, then PowerPoint becomes a great kind of sword weapon that you're using to ram home your point, as opposed to a shield that you kind of hide behind. So yes, you do not have to use PowerPoint. Look at some of the greatest speeches in history that were given before PowerPoint was ever invented. Myth number eight. I should copy the greats. you know, I should study Barack Obama, or I should study Mahatma Gandhi, or I should study who are great, like Greta Thunberg, who's actually pretty good speaker, I find, in her kind of her own quirky style. You don't study the greats. Don't study the greats in order to copy them, I should say. So yes, you can study them, but don't study in order to copy. Don't try to sound like them or use the same cadence as them, or use the same phrases as them, or copy the jokes that they use, which I know a few people have done. You are best when you are authentic. You are best when you sound most like yourself, most like how you naturally sound in a private conversation with a great friend. That is when you will come across as most engaging and most interesting to your audience. If you try and sound like somebody else, even if that person is a great speaker, it is not going to connect as well with your audience as if you sound like yourself. As Oscar Wilde said, be yourself, everyone else is taken. I want you to be yourself. Maybe hype it up a little bit, right? Add an extra 10% so you really lean into your own character and your own personality. But that is going to stand you in far better stead than trying to copy the so-called greats. So don't do it. It's a myth that that's the best way to become a great public speaker. Okay, myth number nine. You got to use big words, fancy words, to be a great public speaker. You know, you got to use, you know, these astonishing phrases. You know, we think of Martin Luther King, who had these amazing visual imagery, metaphors, all of that kind of stuff with his speaking. And we think, yeah, actually, that's the way to go. That's what I have to do. It is a myth. You do not have to use complicated, complex phraseology, you know, these amazingly diverse words in order to be an effective public speaker. In fact, to an extent, it works in the opposite way. And I'll explain it in this way. So when you're reading a book or whatever it is, then yes, there is a place for ornate language. But the reason is people can take their time to read it. They read it at their own pace. They may go back and reread it if they don't get something. They'll actually stop and look it up. Or, you know, read a little bit and then take a while to let their brain kind of rest and then come back to it. So when people write, for people who are going to read, they can write in all sorts of fantastically ornate ways because the reader will basically take it at their own pace. But when you are speaking or giving a speech or presentation, the listener, the audience, gets one chance to hear, listen, and understand what you are saying in real time with no retakes, no opportunity to go back. I mean, you know, unless it's a TED talk where you can pause it, but let's assume that we're talking about a live presentation. They have no opportunity to go back, you know, reassimilate, all of that stuff. They get one chance to listen to it. So you are better off keeping your language simple so that they have no trouble in understanding what you are saying, as long as the message that you are sharing is one that they get to think about. Oh, that sounds like my door. So keep it simple. Leonardo da Vinci said simplicity is the ultimate sophistication. I wholeheartedly agree. It is actually harder to keep it simple than it is to try and be complex and ornate in your delivery, in your words. Or as Einstein said, if you can't explain it simply, you don't understand it well enough. Again, keep it simple and just let your words matter, because the content of what you're saying is of great value. So that is myth number nine, which takes us finally to myth number 10. I don't know if this isn't the most important one. As I say, I didn't really think about the order of this, but it definitely is one that worries everybody, which is that your audience is going to laugh if you mess up. And for laugh, you can substitute they'll boo, they'll heckle, they'll basically in some way attack you if you mess up. And all I'm going to say is this. It ain't true. I can tell you, and it's not that this is a good thing, but I can tell you the most probable response to a bad speech. Indifference, right? That is literally the most common response by an audience to a bad speech. It's indifference. It's, okay. And they kind of switch off and, you know, scroll through Instagram on their phones, right? It's indifference. That is the most likely reaction if you mess up and give a bad speech. Or at least when I say most likely, it's the, oh, there's another plane. Yeah, you know, hello plane. Gosh, you see, that's the thing about being in this office is like all the sound kind of carries through. So let me tell you the most, it's not that it's most likely, but it's the worst case response. The most likely worst case response, let's put it that way, which is indifference. The audience kind of, okay, this isn't a speech that's keeping my attention. I'm going to let it wander and I'm going to either daydream or look at my phone or pretend to read the notes and kind of zone out, whatever it is. That is actually the worst kind of response you will get. It isn't the audience standing up and screaming and shouting at you or booing or heckling. That really just doesn't happen in 99% of speeches. And the 1% it does happen is if you're in a particular scenario, you're a comedian, right? Where kind of heckling is part of the history of comedy, you know, or maybe you are a big politician. I know Tony Blair gave a speech to the Women's Institute where he just pitched it wrong and they kind of slow hand clapped him, that kind of thing. But generally the audience is just going to be quiet, maybe be a little bit uncomfortable, but they're just going to grin and bear it. And then they're going to go through it. And most of them will be thinking, not who is this clown, but goodness, thank God that wasn't me up there. That's happened to me before. Or I know how he or she feels. I get it. You know, I'm glad it wasn't me. So the audience is not going to boo. They're not going to laugh. They're not going to heckle. Most likely they're just going to be silent. It might be a bit uncomfortable, but you can deal with that. The earth is not going to kind of swallow you up, open up and swallow you whole. So don't over worry. In fact, it kind of works in the opposite way because audiences are famously generous with public speakers. They want you to succeed. Why? Well, two things or two reasons. One is that actually people are generally good-hearted. You know, I know sometimes in this world it may not seem that, but when they perform an audience, they generally are good-hearted. They generally want people to do well. They all know because everybody knows about the challenges of public speaking. They know how hard it is, so they allow for that and they kind of will you on, which is why if you've messed up, you'll sometimes see kind of people encouraging you and things like that, right? So there's that kind of altruistic position of audiences. But the other part is this. From an audience's point of view, it's better to hear a good speech than a bad one. So you actually want your speaker to do well because that's better for you. So it's kind of a self-interested part as well. It's just nicer to sit through a speech that actually says something of value, the one that's completely meaningless. So on every front, you should not worry about your audience being nasty, being heckling, laughing, all of that thing. They're on your side. They want you to succeed. Use and feed off their energy to kind of propel you to greatness with your speech or presentation. So there we are. The 10 myths of public speaking. I think probably close to the top 10. If you can think of something else that you know, do share it with me because I always like to kind of refine and develop my content and topic. But I am hoping that that was of some good value for you. I'm hoping you enjoyed it. I'm hoping if any of these myths you personally subscribed to or believed beforehand, now you feel a little bit better about it. But yeah, hit me up. Make sure you Subscribe. If you do a review, remember, I always give a shout out to you if you do a review. So do a review. You'll see the links there. Or if you're in Apple Podcasts, just kind of go in there and do a review, and I will give you a shout out in the very next episode, or at least the next episode after I've seen your review. Once in a while, I kind of miss them, but I will always give you the shout out. So thank you very much, guys. Really, really appreciate you lending me your ears and your brains. Wherever you happen to be listening to this, which just leaves me to say goodbye in a language of my choice. This episode will be goodbye in Hausa, which is a language spoken in northern Nigeria, and it is Sey Anjima, I think. Some of my friends will know that, told me I'm stupid otherwise. But yeah, that is goodbye in Hausa, Sey Anjima. I hope you guys have a great week. I will see you shortly on the next episode, continuing with another episode of season 6.